Hi folks, before we start the podcast, I want to give a quick rundown on what's available right now on the Patreon feed. This week I've been very busy. We have podcasts from the Northern Ireland Assembly elections. We have a brilliant insight with Rosemary Maughan from the travelling community and aspects of that. You may have seen the clip went pretty viral on social media. That's available right now on patreon.com/tortoiseshack, as well as a conversation myself and Martin had yesterday with Keane O'Callaghan from the Sock Dems on the housing situation, including the Ukrainian refugee crisis and the multifaceted aspects of it and what they are suggesting differently than what the government are currently doing. There's also a conversation with Leszek Wasilenko in Ukraine on what's happening there. And there will be our Sunday show, as usual, for patrons to come along and have their say. All of these are available now on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's a cheap pint. It's a fancy cup of coffee once a month, and it helps keep these podcasts going. Now, just to let you know, this podcast you're about to hear is from our recent Tortoiseshack Live in the Sugar Club, recorded a few weeks ago on a Sunday evening with the man, the myth, the legend, and I won't say that lightly, but other than that, he's still from Cork, but we'll let that go. Don O'Leary. This was a brilliant conversation, in my opinion, and not just because I got to sit there and listen to Don for the hour, but I do think he's lived a remarkable life and he's a remarkable man. Have a listen, enjoy it. Just to let you know, Don has received a terminal diagnosis, so that is discussed as well. So if you're, if you're worried, if you're triggered by that, there's a warning to let you know that is discussed, and we discuss it in Don's fashion. But look, I highly recommend it. I left elated, and I hope you all enjoy it. Talk to you all soon, and thanks for the support.
I'm trying to make sure everybody's taking. Look, listen, folks, we're going to kick off now. Mick Finnegan is slipping out the back because that's what Mick does. This is actually an awful thing to say, but I thought we'll go last. Sure, it'll be a conversation after the last two conversations. It's like trying to follow the Beatles, and unfortunately, I've not picked a great dance partner. But I am thrilled, actually, genuinely thrilled to introduce the director of the Cork Life Centre and one of the most dedicated people you'll ever meet and most driven person in this room, bar none, trust me, Don O'Leary. Please give a round of applause to Don O'Leary. You've no idea. Sit your ass down. This is a long time in the making, Don, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a while, isn't it?
Yeah.
Through coddle and all sorts of things.
Your story could write 4 or 5 books, in my opinion. You know, like someone said to me one day that...
Books.
Huh?
Bad books.
Yeah, not necessarily. But I want to ask how someone who was tried for treason, ended up in Portlaoise, became an educator, has a school for... Became an educator, but built a school that looks after children who need resources. A lot of talk earlier about trauma. You deal with people who lived experiences of trauma. We'll skip to the chase. You've received a terminal diagnosis.
Yeah, I may, but look.
And no, hang on. And then he texts me.
It'll be over soon.
And he says, "I'm off to Ukraine. I'm going to bring generators and medical supplies to Ukraine." And not only did he just say that, he says, "And by the way, I don't want to give it to some right wing fucker." It was pretty much what you said, yeah.
Yeah,
So I got in touch with someone from the Roma community in Ukraine. Yeah. You made the contact then afterwards. Lo and behold, you meet them at the border, and then they do. Don, how does you like? Let's go back to that bit. First of all, tried for treason.
Yeah, that kind of took me by surprise as well, actually. I say my wife was very shocked at that, actually. She's sitting down there, she got over. I was politically involved with Sinn Féin for years. And a special branch looking for Easter lilies raided my house and they found a poster. And then I had an argument with the then minister, he was the then tarnished, Peter Barry, blue shirt, of the old type, makes tea, which I won't drink. but we had an argument because he said the posters were removed from the Sinn Féin offices at the time because I was standing for election. I had to write back and tell him they were sold out, but if he wanted one, I would send him one, which I did. They raided my house, they sent me to Sarda. A couple of months later, they left to go too long. They wanted to bring it to the district court, ended up going to the special criminal court, and the judge laughed and has sent me home. And they wouldn't give me a lift home, so I had to go back into train myself. And then when I appeared, they gave me 5 years for treason, all because of a poster and a lying superintendent. And I'm not saying anything against the superintendent that the judge didn't say, because lo and behold, I get a year off because I'm a very good person and I was very good, so they gave me a year off. And then when it came to my appeal, the judge said the guards had lied. I thought I was going home. No, he gave me a year off because the guards had lied, but I was doing the evidence set against me, but I was charged with treason and I was convicted of treason for having a poster. It isn't something I leave the poster over. It isn't something, you know, that I boast about.
No, I know that, but
because 3 years in Port Leash is, I wouldn't advise anyone to go there for a holiday. Definitely not 3 years long anyway, but I did. And look, it is what it is.
But then how do you go from, you came out of there, like you mentioned you were a candidate for Sinn Féin, that political relationship parted ways?
Well, no, I was elected as a councillor for Sinn Féin in Cork. I was the first one elected since 1956. And then I had my health had a health problem in relation to, I lost part of a lung. And I'm a believer, if you work with people and you put yourself forward, you know, to stand, I think Lynn would maybe not agree fully, but I think she has done this. You know, I have to be available when someone calls. And if I'm not available, then why would I be doing it? And so I couldn't be available at night. My wife was delighted because I wasn't getting any more phone calls at 2:30 in the morning. And I took a decision that I couldn't represent people, so I stood back. And then, very fortunately, I was involved with young people. I'd always kind of looked towards being a teacher. 11 of us in the house, and I the eldest. I was never going to get to college, but I did, and my degree is youth and community. Unfortunately, I ended up in the Cork Leigh Centre. And it's just been an amazing journey. You know,
for people who aren't here, or who aren't in the room, who aren't aware of Don, when he says he fell into the Cork Life Centre, if you've listened to many of Vicky's earlier podcasts on police, if you've listened to some of the things and you've seen, it's not your normal school, Don.
Well, it's not a school to begin with. It's an education centre. We work with young people that are out of formal education. Who are politicians would describe as early school leavers. I don't. Early school leaving is putting the blame on the kids. And kids can't fail the system. It's the system fails the kids. And we continue to do that. And it's not just, I mean, I think one of the things really go that listening to Lynn and the others speaking, it's the same for kids. I mean, exactly the same in relation to drugs. So you get a 14-year-old child, gets into trouble with the guards, is smoking hash, goes in, and the judge says, you've got a treatment. If someone told you to go to treatment, say I'm an alcoholic, and I never drank in my life, but if someone said, Dan, you're an alcoholic, you need to get treatment, you're drinking too much. And even if I was, and I didn't believe that, would I go? So why would you expect children to go? So I think for us inside, it's about, you know, recognising where the child is at, staying and understanding the drugs they're taking, making sure they're safe, and making sure they're safe for a number of reasons, that they're safe while they're taking and while they're using, but also making sure that they're safe from drug dealers. I mean...
Well, harm reduction doesn't work unless it's harm reduction for the user, and we minimise the risk of the actual pusher, if I want to use that term. It's probably the wrong term, but you know, the market is what it is, and that's what Lynn and Paula spoke about really well. But I'm interested then, because you've come, your experience of 3 years in prison must have said to you, more needs to be, like, when I get out of here, I want to actually do something completely different, surely.
Well, no, because, I mean, I can't say that I don't want to unite Ireland. That has not changed. I have not left politics. You know, you get out of bed in the morning, as far as I'm concerned. That's a political statement, and it's one that I intend to keep making. And, you know, I'm left-wing. And my worry about left-wing is that... There's one thing sure about all left-wing organisations. They all fall over one another. You'll never have a left-wing government. Like, it's a cod. You know, they see things happening and they can't agree. They'll agree and then they don't like the colour of the shirt, or they don't like the way you tie your shoelaces. You know, it's going to be something. And it's just a pity, you know. Because I think the country is crying out for change. I think, you know, communities are they're bad known. Wait until these guys start paying for the last 4 years. Who do you think is going to end up paying that? It'll be the kids I'm working with. It'll be the communities that I live in, and the communities that a lot of us live in. And they're the ones that are going to suffer. It ain't going to be the boys building the houses.
But that's...
Oh, they're not. Sorry. Sorry.
We'd love them to build some houses,
yeah,
clearly.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
But Don, I just... like. Okay, I get the whole idea that remains political, but it also puts it, to me, it speaks of someone who says, actually put the politics aside and let's tackle inequality.
Oh yeah, I mean, look, I think for me that has always been the way. I mean, I would have looked at politics as being able to do that. I learned it doesn't.
Naively.
I learned it doesn't. So being able to work, and being able to work with these magnificent kids. You know, I say inside, most of my staff are volunteers. I have 70 staff this year, and they're working with kids right across the spectrum. We have kids with autism. We have kids that are, you know, in the juvenile justice system. We have kids that are in the mental health system. And we have kids that just the education system that we run in this country does them no favours. So they're all of it. And working with these kids, you start to see, you know, there's a guy called Tony Bates. He started Headstrong and Jigsaw, and he has this saying that every child deserves one good adult. And my belief is I'll add to that and say that every adult deserves the opportunity to be that one good adult for a child. You know, kids suffer a lot. You know, we talk about, you know, kids are blamed for the drugs in the country. A joke. And even if you take the, you know, you talk about the Kinnens and all of these, some grand, they've done what they've done. But who brought the drugs in the first place? Because the Kinnens didn't start out with enough money to bring that drugs in. So where are the guys that have made all of the money out of that, who are still sitting there, probably voting Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? If they're voting, some of them don't care, probably voting for Norma Foley. but
this is a man, ladies and gentlemen, who doesn't care anymore.
I've always been like this, right? I mean, I mean, I'm sitting with trying to get money from the Department of Education, and they're threatening not to talk to me. I don't know. I don't care. They've never paid me. What are they going to do for me? Wait a couple of months and they won't have to. But in fairness, Dave, you know, I credit them with keeping me alive a bit because I love a good fight. Mm. So I'll keep that up, you know.
We're being flippant now, but the diagnosis came, and if you don't mind me saying, I know you knew your prognosis was not good, and you said to me, even when we were discussing going to Ukraine, you said to me on the phone that, look, I know I'll survive because I'm going to be buried over here because I'm a bigger pain in the hole over here than I am in Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I believe in that, you know. I suppose one of the things, and we were talking about left-wing a while ago, I mean, I know some left-wing people criticise me for bringing stuff to the Ukraine. It's a joke. We've sent stuff to Afghanistan, we've sent stuff to Syria, to Kurdistan. What did they do? You know, I mean, why
send
do...
Send a few tweets, Don, doesn't that matter?
Well, yeah, you know, great, you know. But I mean, why would you be... You know, supporting one fascist over another. I mean, yeah, you know, that they are. But, you know, for all the talk about the right-wing brigade, the Azov brigade in Ukraine, there's an international brigade fighting there as well, you know. And for me, the important thing is, and what brought me into it in the first place, was women and children. I mean, reading about women in a maternity hospital, those that could leave were taken away, those that couldn't for other medical reasons left there. With no light, with no sheets, kids the same in hospitals. Yeah, that's who you look after. You can talk about your right wings afterwards, you know. They'll still be there to give out about.
Can I ask one question? And this is totally going to flip this on its head. And you came from a household of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael voters, yeah?
Unfortunately, it started out that way. I know DJ would know this, but there was two problems. One, my father was Fine Gael, and they were a Glen Rovers family, and my mother was Fianna Fáil, and they were St Finbarr's. And so we had huge problems anytime there was matches or elections. You'd be better off hibernating.
This is the Capulets and the Montagues, folks, if you want to get the shape.
So just the order of the way when I was young. Yeah, two lunatics, the two of them, arguing about Fine Gael. They changed afterwards, yeah. I think.
Yeah. And so but growing up, you said how many 11 siblings?
Or one of 11 siblings, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm assuming it's Cork, so there was probably two bedrooms.
Three?
No, but I mean...
We were lucky we got the extra one. No, I suppose, look, I've lived in working class estates all my life. If I won the lottery in the morning, I wouldn't move from... No, I'm never going to win the lottery because I don't buy the ticket. But if I was to win the lottery...
That's because you, in your heart, you actually believe. And this is a nice compliment to your wife in the audience that you won the lottery when you several years ago.
Why did I win the lotto?
Because you won the lotto because you actually are content enough to put up with being proud from that... How do I put that? The county of Cork. I can't bring myself to call it a city, but go ahead.
Well, you know, Cork is the real capital. You know, I mean, you talk about Dublin, and you put forward that Coddle is going to be the national ditch.
It's
like something that was taken, dredged out. You know where the strawberry fields run down to the Liffey. It's like something that was dredged out of the bottom of the Liffey there and put up in the place.
It probably was.
I think so. But no, I think, you know, coming back, you know, the badges are on sale here. We get very little money from the department. And the thing for me is, you know, the Constitution, where Easter Sunday, the biggest thing to me in the Constitution or in the proclamation was that we would treat all the children of the nation equally. That hasn't started. I mean, if you can't achieve that much, if we can't look at our children and say they're equal, where are we going to? And I haven't done that. And I think for me, it's seeing our kids below, you know. Going forward, you know, going to university, sound, built away. I'm quite happy to see them go to work. I'm quite happy to see them coming back in to see me as I took a decision when I had the diagnosis that anyone I cared about, I wanted them to hear from me. I couldn't give a fiddler's feck. Who knows, I have cancer. You know, it doesn't matter. But for the young people and their parents that I work with, I think it's an edifice of the centre, you know. I'm very fortunate that, you know, some of these kids have experienced more trauma in their life. If I lived three lifetimes, I don't think I'd have experienced that. And, you know, I'm privileged to journey with the kids and their families for however long we journey. So I wanted to be honest with them and open with them. And kids are brutally honest. So some of that was quite funny, sitting with them and telling them that I had this... That I wasn't going to be around in the future for too long. I'm kind of lying about that now because I'm already 5 months over when they said he was going to be dead.
You've literally gone past your sell-by date.
I've gone past my sell-by date. Well, but the kids, I mean, the kids, like, I mean, one kid came to me and said, what's going to happen to the life centre when you die? And I said, well, I can't take it with me, so the other staff are going to... The kid was happy, oh, off he went. But it's that kind of, you know, kids will give you that kind of honesty. Another one said, Dan, do you know the day you're dying? And I said, no, not exactly. But I won't leave without telling him leaving. Sound off of the door, happy out, and grounds, you know. And I think it's that kind of an openness. And, you know, I'm not going to be called Mr. I've never been called Mr. in the centre. Called lots of other things, mind you, but not Mr. And it's just a beautiful experience to be there. And I suppose one of the things that has kept me going is, look, I decided very early on I can do nothing about cancer. Mm-hmm. I can absolutely do nothing. But what I can control is who I want to be with. Tonight is kind of dodgy on that one. Who I want to be with, where I want to be, and what I want to be doing. And you know what? I'm doing that. I mean... the family probably wouldn't agree 100% with that, and probably my work colleagues wouldn't agree 100% with that. But I'm happy, you know. I know where this is ending up. But not for a while. Not during the interview anyway, Tony.
Listen, do you know what's funny? And I'm gonna. This is just an opportunity to throw a bit of shade. Here you are now having that conversation, and the other fella is up there saying, "Oh, he's not well enough to come on stage."
What? But no. Yeah. I know. But look, no, and I think for me, you know, I've just been very fortunate. I mean, as I say, with the kids and the families, and, you know, to see them succeed. And success sometimes is about them being alive. I mean, Vicky talked about, you know, losing a young lad through suicide and you know, me being there when we had to cut him down. You know, that's... And that was due. That is due. And, I said right at the time to Vicky, and I did make complaints to the guards about it. That is due to him getting a beating the week before from guards. He was never in any trouble. And he thought his life was over because he thought he was going to get a conviction. Now, he had mental health issues, but he felt he was never going to get to where he needed to be. And he would have. But because of the beating by the guards... This young man did. And for me, to be working with kids like that and to show them and to be around them, we look, you were talking about Ukraine. We've invited 120,000 refugees in. I don't have any problem with that. We won't take them because we couldn't take 3,000 Syrian refugees. But that's another question.
It took us 10 years to take 3,000 Syrian refugees.
Yeah, I mean, you know, why are we, everyone now opening up their house, come in. Afghanistan, Iraq, Kurdistan, Palestine. Why won't we take refugees to the country from there? That's something the country, I know why we won't do it. It's sad to say it, but like, we're racist. It's embedded. And that's, if you want proof, you have it there. Ukrainians are white, and they can come in.
If we can move mountains for Ukraine, we can move mountains for all. We've seen what's happened in Afghanistan. We've seen what's happened in Yemen. We've seen
Yemen, Sudan, Somalia.
I'm terrified at what's happening in Palestine at the moment. All eyes are on Jerusalem. I was talking to Hannah Salah this morning, and she's not. She has never been. I feel like I'm going to betray a trust here tonight, so I may cut this out, folks, so please. But she's never recovered from the last conflict. She has not been the same person. That, I mean, people might have heard the podcast where we were literally on air, myself and Martin, and a missile hit close to where she was sitting. She has not, and she is already afraid of what might happen in the coming days. So all of those things, yeah, absolutely. But seems really inappropriate to bring it back to you. What do you do then that leads you to this life where you've gone, you know, to be dedicated back to the kids, to the children, and then to still be, I'm going to say, a stone in the shoe, and that's been polite about you. A pain in the arse is probably more likely.
They've actually said that. Yeah, but there's a good thing to that. I know that. And have they got a surprise coming? I mean, yeah, you know, that is true. But you know, I never thought I'd see the day, by the way, that the Department of Education were going to make their strategy on whether I'm dead or alive. I mean, that's to me, that's an achievement, you know. But I suppose for me, you know, when, it's not just being about a stone in the shoe. If it's right, it's right. And you know, if we don't push for our kids to be treated properly, every child. I was in the board of Oberstone. Surprising, I said, for a lot of people. I was on the board of Oberstone. No, I'm opposed to any child being in detention. Why are children in detention? You know, I'll tell you why they're in detention. If you look at the results coming out of some research done in Oberstone, 60% of them had social workers. Over 60% of them have mental health. Over 60% have an addiction issue. And over 70% were out of education. Now, that's education, it's the addiction, and it's mental health. All broken systems. And so instead of putting them into the system, instead of fixing the system that should be working with them, we say, right, send them to Oberstone. Send them to Oberstone at a cost of $350,000 to the state for each young person that goes in there. Now, wouldn't it make
a lot more sense? Sorry, can I just $350
per child, per year, to be in Oberstone? Wouldn't it be far better, even... And I'm not into. I don't think economics should decide this thing. But even if you look at it economically,
don't like economists anymore.
Distrust them totally, Tony. But if we're willing to spend that much to punish children, might it not be better to put that into the communities the children are coming from, into the broken systems? It would lead to a far healthier society, and it would lead to better outcomes for all of our children. So I think, you know, when we look at this, we need to be questioning why the state can spend that kind of money on that and can give me, until I'm fighting them now, I think it's gone up, but 77,000 to work with 55 kids that if they had their way would be in Oberstone because mental health facilities aren't there. Care, there's no care placements anymore. Care now for children is being done for profit. In the whole of Cork City and County now, there's not one care placement open that Tesla run. It's all these private for profit. A lot of them English, by the way. And the money they're getting is over 5,000 a week for each child.
And I just want to come in on that because it's really important. Actually, Deborah, you made the point on earlier where you were talking about the cost of direct provision. We, you know, we look at direct provision as a legacy of the Magdalens, the workhouses, and all of these things. And we always say, I think it was Mary McAuliffe makes the point. She says the poor are always convicted of poverty.
Yeah, and look, even if you look at kids in direct provision, right? We took in a number of kids. Imagine on travelling all the way from Mill Street to Cork to do your leaving cert. All we had was a few hours in the afternoon. The young lad gets his leaving cert. goes away himself, goes into a PLC, gets offered a place, goes back to the Direct Provision Centre. And that was on a Thursday. On the Monday morning, he gets a letter stating that they withdrawn the place because he was a foreign student and he wasn't a citizen, and they refused to give him the place. Considering that most PLCs start out with 30 students a year, by the time they get to Christmas, there's 8, they still wanted him to pay foreign student rate to go into that. And to my understanding, that's still the case. I mean, yeah. You know, what are you doing?
I mean, that is literally systemic racism. That is systemic exclusion.
It is. And look, we talk about, you know, travellers and how we treat travellers. I mean, travellers doing a leaving cert, or should be heading towards a leaving cert, I mean, put out into a prefab with colouring books heading towards a leaving cert. And, you know, that's true. And we have proof of that. That's not racism, is it not? You know, but in schools, and I know I'm not down on teachers, not down on schools. They're part of a system that is there to break kids and not to encourage kids to be educated. I mean, we don't even, the system, the Leaving Cert doesn't prepare kids for anything. What does it prepare them for? Third level? No. Because the biggest dropout rate in any third level is in first year. And the reason being is that even with kids that are supposed to be high academic achievers, used to getting 92%, by the way, I never got that when I was in school, 90 to 92%, and they go into a college system that then tells them, you can't use the word I in any of your assignments. They're never told that. They're not shown how to do the bibliography. And they're ending up, they don't know about the curve. And so they're getting 62% and they're in the horrors. Actually, if people opened up to them in the universities, they'd be telling them, actually, you're still doing very well. But they don't know that and they're dropping out. We don't prepare the kids. Kids don't know what they're going into. You know, last year I had six kids that said they want to go into psychology. And I said, sound, what psychology? What's that going to do? Well, I want to do counselling. I said, we're going to do 4 years of psychology and then you're going to have to do 4 years of counselling. Kids don't even know. And we talk about reform of a leaving cert. And the fantastic Minister of Education with her fabulous department. it's a department that goes back years. They crossed the Alps with Genghis Khan, I think. If he could come and collect them now, it would be really appreciated, but I don't think it will. But they're there and they decide, we're going to make a reform of the Leaving Cert. So what do they do? They say, what do kids like? Oh, climate action. They've had marches, climate action. We've done politics for the last 3 years, and climate action, climate change, is part of that. They decide, oh yeah, we'll do drama, art and music. Schools do that anyway. What's the change? There is absolutely no change there. And they then say they're not going to make kids anxious. So what are they going to do? They're going to bring 2D exams forward into fifth year and give them the results. If they're done badly in both, how much more anxious they're going to be doing second papers? It's absolute rubbish. And I don't think they talk to any children. If they did, I don't know, they went to some other country. I mean, I can understand, everybody in the world knows that the best education systems to look at are probably those, for child welfare, are probably those of the Scandinavian countries. Our department decided to look at France, which has exactly the same number of subjects as we do here, and the same type of subjects. Why? The reform that they're doing now is reform to protect the system.
Because it's always funny, because I remember a few years ago under Michael Noonan, they brought some of the major corporates in to talk about the syllabus, which is not unusual in history. Where you got to go back to when people talk about the rise of populism, and if you go back to when populism meant actually things people wanted, as opposed to, you know, right wing demagogues, it was the corporates had to actually move, whether it was the rubber barons in the US and all, they had to actually do things to change things. And where they worried is we need to shape the syllabus
to create the cogs and the wheels that we wanted. And one of the things that has happened over and over again in this country is we decide, actually, what does the workforce look like? And we bring them in to shape the syllabus. And I know in the previous Minister for Education, they brought them in and they said, let's look at any of these reforms and what do you need from us, from our workforce? Some people might say that's pragmatic. Some people might say it's building our tax base.
Well, will I tell you what I call it? Shite. Because and I'm sorry, Norm, but the reason that it is shite is, why are we getting 13-year-olds to decide what they want to do when they're 21? Why are we telling 13-year-olds at that age you have to decide what you're going to do at 21? And you talk about people. It's exactly the same thing, though, that they need an underclass, so that, you know, people that are not going to be readily employable and they'll take anything, because it can keep the ones that are working for the very low wages. If you don't want to work, well, there's more here that will work. And it's like it's the Victorian age. With new clothes.
Nothing will make you pay your rent and go without food and seeing homeless figures going up every month.
Yeah, and I mean, look, and nothing, they're not going to care about that. I mean, look, here's the facts on that. They're talking about trades. Who killed trades in this country? The government. Because they closed all the technological colleges that brought kids to trades. And they were helped by our builders. Because what the builders did was, you can check around the country and say you'll find thousands of people who did up to 2 years in a trade. And then because they had to pay more wages, they were laid off. And another two young lads or two young girls were taken in to do the trade. And the same thing happened. If you bring kids into a technological college after junior cert, give them 4 years there, they come out qualified and they're ready to work. Not good enough for our builders, though, because there's only four big builders left in the country. And if the country split up between them.
No, but they're not. They're developers. They're not builders.
Oh, right. Yeah, builders, yeah.
Let's tell the truth here. They're mechanics of developing. But
I'll be nice and say nothing.
Oh, no, it's all bollocks. Like, that's the truth. Like, we know this. Like, I mean,
but when you hear every carpenter in the country and every plaster in the country has to have their own business now before they get work, it's a bit of a joke.
But I'm thinking of, like, a couple of years ago, Orla Hegarty used to speak about the Dunkirk model, about needing lots of small builders competing with one another to deliver homes. Did you know that the developers have started to refer to the Dunkirk model, and they've adopted it to mean something completely different? They mean about the action of how the state got involved, and in other words, subsidies, and that's what they're talking about.
Yeah, and that'll keep going, you know. We're not going to change that. I mean, one of the things that I found interesting when we went into the Ukraine, we had to spend the night at an Airbnb on the Polish-Ukraine border, because there was a curfew in Ukraine and we couldn't get into the Ukraine and meet the people we needed to meet, because they wouldn't get back into curfew. So we booked an Airbnb. Of course, I said it was close by. It was three-quarter ways to the top of a mountain. No, I didn't mind, because once I took my night medication, I was asleep. So the boys were driving the buses. And when we woke, when I woke, I was freezing. It was 2:30 in the morning. And we went into a wooden chalet. A fantastic job, 3 bedrooms, kitchen. We couldn't build those here because there's no planning permission. But I have an idea. So I'm, and this has not been bad, but I'm thinking that I know someone with a lot of land in this country, the bishops, and I'm approaching one of the bishops and, will you give me the land and we'll build some of these houses, because they're 25 grand each. We're doing it for the Ukrainians coming in. You can't get planning permission. I bet you they won't stop planning permission for that. And then once you have it for that, you have it for the Irish homeless.
You can the science, the technology's actually moved on that, because you can actually some of these timber frames can be actually zero carbon in a way as well. So there's so much more that can be done with them. It's I put it to you then, actually do issue that challenge, because that would be the thing that would really piss them off, because we can show where one of the things we're big on the tortoise shack is saying, well, actually, it's been done elsewhere. Why don't we just implement it?
It has been done elsewhere. And, you know, here's an interesting on Ukraine for me is that, you know, we were lucky. I mean, you were very good to me in giving me people, and I got someone else from another quarter. Women. Two amazing women. Like, they were forces
we're sitting
in
here because we got away with it, but the women actually did all the work. So.
And the women were brilliant. And I mean, you know, the men that were with them were just, they backed orders and they got the things done. But, I mean, you know, asking them what they need and stuff like that. But I know this, the minute the bombs falling into Ukraine, the minute the world stops caring, Ukraine still has to be rebuilt. And so with some of the people we've met, you know, I think we can do something in relation, you know, something small, maybe in relation to schools in Ukraine and giving young people an opportunity to get back to normal. You know, I mentioned, and it was kind of throwaway a while ago, was the 120,000 refugees they're bringing in. I mean, whether we like it or not, they're not capable of bringing in 120,000. We won't have the child and adolescent mental health services because we don't have them for our own. These kids have seen an awful lot of trauma. Who's going to work with them? What are you going to do there? Unfortunately, as is the case in more worse situations, you're going to have women coming out of there who have been sexually assaulted, and who's going to deal with their trauma? And where are we going to provide that from? I mean, you know, we make statements, and we could leave people in a worse position than when they started out. I think that's the horrendous thing about this. If you don't think something through, you are going to make things worse. And why are we making it worse for the most vulnerable?
Ireland has done, moved mountains, as I said earlier. Like, you can arrive at the airport, you can get your PPS number, you get your medical card, you can apply for all of these things, but we're still putting people in tents or in temporary accommodation. Simon Coveney foolishly made a rod for his own back by saying it's a temporary measure, 48 hours. Within 48 hours, the Taoiseach, the Leo Varadkar, rolled back on that and said, oh, I don't want to put a timeline on it.
Yeah, but like, I'm sorry, but look, I don't care. I mean, people have done this all the goodness of their heart. We see what way the goodness in their heart is after 8 weeks of having someone who is crying in the middle of the night because of what they've left. Mm. You know, let's see where that's going to go to. And we don't have the services. I think we should be taking refugees all the time. But I think we have to have the services. We don't have the services. We're making no effort to put those services there for those people. And that's wrong. I mean, you're setting people up with false hope. You know,
Can I go just before we close? I want to bring you mentioned Ukraine and your experience there, and I know you were as belligerent as you always are when you had dealings with, say, Polish border guards and maybe Ukraine.
I said pricks.
But they were
trying to stop me from leaving Poland to go into Ukraine because of Schengen. The guys that know everything about Schengen, who stopped all the refugees coming into Europe. And we did have a little argument about her and everyone else. I said, stop. But I was right. I'm not going to back down from a jumped up pole telling me that I can't leave Europe and that I have to make an adult decision. I was at the border. I wanted to go into Ukraine. I mean, you know, they're still the same.
But this is the really mean question of me. Every time now, for the next whatever time you've got left, every day you wake up, you say, I'm going to do what I want to do, where I'm going to do it, and I want to make all the... What do you want to do? Who do you want to kick in the shins hardest?
I haven't a lot of time to do it, like, but if I could get at the Department of Education one day inside there, and I'd clear a road for them. I'm inclined to say, could I call in favours and give a 10-minute warning? No, I won't do that.
No.
But I mean, where do you move these people? Like, I mean, they don't listen, they don't care. Children are not on their agenda. They're not. They don't care about children. I think, you know, that's obvious. It's And I know, look, some of what I said, no, yeah, give me the day, and I'm serious about that part getting in there. But why are we keeping these guys in there? Like, they're obviously making their own decisions. The minister doesn't know what's going on. God help her when she gets defeated at the election and she tries to go back into a school. Good luck with that. I'd say out of Mongolia might be an opportunity for a principal. But like,
we're back at Mary Harney territory, are we?
Could easily be. But look, I think what I'd like to do is I want to see some of the kids that I'm working with maybe, you know, achieve what they want to do. I want to go to Wexford this summer and with the kids, and to, you know, we go for a 12 midnight swim in the ocean, which is absolutely brilliant. The kids love it. I love it. So I want to do that. And we take it, you know, every a couple of months. You know, after that, I want to get new staff for next year, and you're then into the craft fair, and there's lots, you know. I can't go at the moment. I'm kind of busy. And that's not forgetting my family, because I you know, they were really lucky. They got rid of me for 3 years, you know. Yeah. My daughter thought she was, my daughter thought when she went up and all, she saw the sandbags, and Betty told her that that we loved eating loads of potatoes, so she thought the sandbags were potatoes outside Portley's prison. We'd been eating some potatoes. But I do want to spend time with my grandkids. They're amazing. They knocked me down, you know. I was presented.
Don't start with this honorary doctorate. No,
you must call me doctor from now on, actually. I got a doctorate, and the grandkids were there, and the smallest fellow wanted to know, is he finished speaking yet? And the other three, the only interest they took was when Anya Hyland said I had been in jail. Now, I don't know how they missed that, but like, there's stuff all over the whole thing. It's like, but like them and the small fellow like came out, and he still does it to this day, and he comes in and says, how's Dr. Fart? So it is kind of. But look, the other thing is personal awards are absolutely rubbish. Although if I'd been wiser and cuter, I should have got this, you know, diagnosis a couple of years back, because I'd have got an Academy Award. I could have got a Brit. I mean, I wouldn't have accepted that. I could have got a Tony. Could have got a Tony, you know. And I might have got a Nobel Peace Prize, you know. You know, I was worried, you know, when I was going to Ukraine. I wanted to go early on, and I couldn't, because I was afraid the circus would follow, because unfortunately that's what's happening. And then I heard someone else was going on. They were taking the circus, so I was away. But like, if the circus had come and I fell getting off the boat in Cherbourg, and they got an award for saving the ground. You know, that's how it goes. I wish, you know, I know people mean well, but personal awards are rubbish anyway. And what is good is I know the family enjoy getting them, and I know some of the people behind it meant really well. But I've, you know, it's enough. You know, and there's one that I was asked to start to take. I disappeared to the Ukraine so they didn't give it to me, and I hope they're after forgetting about it now, but you know, that's...
Folks, you've no idea the amount of work and the amount of lives the Cork Life Centre and Don O'Leary has impacted and changed and made better. You've no idea the impact it's had on even the stuff we've done at the Tortoise Shack, and the people that we've got to speak to and try to help, and the families we've tried to bring some sort of peace to in different situations. I am really grateful, and I said I wouldn't cry, and I'm not going to, but I'm actually really proud.
He actually likes me.
I'm actually really,
I don't like him, you know, that hasn't changed.
And we're gonna, and he has agreed that he's gonna eat coddle with me. And
never. And could I before you finish off, I mean, look, I think it's important, you know. Dr. Vicky Conway came in and talked to some of the young people I had, a boil on this young lad and some girls that had been, you know, sexually abused. And it was brilliant. And how they felt after that was amazing. And I think one of the things I'd say about the Tortoise Shack is it's left wing. I'd say to people, stay left, vote left. But make sure it's real left. You know, there's people out there claim to be left. You know, being left to Genghis Khan is not a good place to be. So, I mean, you know, thanks to Tortoiseach, because I think it is an opportunity for people to hear the other side. You know, I think at one stage, Christy Moore wrote a song in relation to an answer to Paul Brady's The Island. And I think that's what the Tortoiseach does. There's the island that's represented in the media, and then there's reality for ordinary people, and I think that's what the Tortoiseach deals with. So thanks.
Thank you. I'm just going to steal the last line and say Genghis Khan and his brother Don. Thank you so much, Don O'Leary. Thanks, folks. Really appreciate it. Talk to you all.
Can someone tell me, is there knives in my back there?
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.